at least something, how can I say it? I can call it
just
maybe.
Just get closer.
Yeah, keep closer or a picture like
the
that.
Best
what
we can,
do? Yes.
Right? The best we can is referring to hadith. Like Imam Zaman said at the beginning of Ghibat Kubra, he said, فَرْجَعُوا إِلَى رُوَاتَ حَدِيثَنَا. So we refer to hadith, we refer to fuqaha, we refer to mujtahideen, we refer to wali faqih, whoever is in charge of the community of mu'mineen at the time.
Okay.
But that's the best we can do. But we have to keep in mind that this is the limited version.
Mm-hmm.
This is not
the original
complete substitute.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that answer is a good one. When we think about, you know, some question or some challenges, some objections that we may have about the, you know, the way that the Islamic Republic of Iran is now carrying out the justice, because we normally get this a lot that,
yes,
you know, if that is the plan, then what is this? You know,
yes.
So how can we sort of reconcile between that example,
yes,
of, for example, Imam Zaman alayhi salatu wasalam, and the you know, the system, the justice system that we've been brought about by the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam in their ahadith, and the application that we have been experiencing in the Islamic Republic of Iran? And I think that would be a good
which
answer.
Which is not ideal yet.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
so,
fully achieved, which is not fully achieved.
Yeah.
Yet.
So we are trying our best, you know, to get there. But of course, there are many things, you know, many hindrances, let,
yes,
alone, you know, the
What are those? What are those obstacles, brother, on the way?
Yeah. I believe the most important ones, and as Ayatollah Khamenei, Hafadullah, he himself describes and actually explains. He says that, you know, we have always in front of the justice seekers, we have always the mustakbirin.
Okay.
So there are some people who are trying their best not to allow people and, you know, sort of expand their own reign of, you know, access.
That's right.
Which consequently leads to what? To the, you know, to the narrowness of the scope of other people's freedom. So you know, they are always active, the mustakbirin, the ones that try to get
that's
as
right,
more as possible.
Okay.
So this is one of them. So now in the world, you know, there's no need to say that who, you know, what ideology. I want to really like,
yes,
to call it an ideology. It's
okay,
not just a political
ideology
movement.
In terms
this
of
this is an,
yes,
ideology.
Okay.
That ideology encompasses the Zionism, the way that,
okay,
the United States of America is yes, lead and is governed, and all other, you know, people who have this in common with these sorts of ideologies, by you know, by making others withdraw from their,
that's
scopes
right,
of freedom,
that's
and
right,
then, you know, going on and taking their place.
Sorry, and the sad news is that the Muslim lands are day by day very much becoming similar to the liberal capital system. And this is really the sad news. I mean, if you look at the picture just superficially, it is very beautiful, okay? Beautiful buildings, beautiful houses, luxurious lifestyle. But behind the scene, the rich is becoming richer, the poor is becoming poorer, okay? And this is not the justice or adala that Islam has been looking for, at least what we know from the side of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Ali alayhi salam, and the other infallible imams. This is very much like the aristocrat system of justice, whose Baitul Mal has been changed into a kind of khazana, a treasury fund, and then distributed by the ruler of the king among the people according to their own understanding and their own wishes, and which culminated into many tragedies during the history. But the case is that reaching this type of adala from one side is very much easy because we have it inside our fitra, Sheikh Sadeh. From the other side, we have these obstacles on our way. How to manage? Beside referring to ahadith and the verses of the Holy Quran.
That's basically why religion is there.
Okay.
Because the source of all problems is hubb ad-dunya.
Okay.
Different levels of hubb ad-dunya. Hubb ad-dunya ra'su kull khatiyah. Right, so in one lecture I had in this Muharram, I said we have three types of religious people. The first type, the lowest type, are not really religious. they're munafiqeen, basically. They just use the name of the religion to get to the dunya that they want.
Their own goals.
They're using the clothing of religion. They're using the appearance of a Muslim, of a mu'min, to get to religion. And we have these throughout the history. They're just using religion to get to money, power, wealth, everything else.
Okay.
And then the second type are the common people, the normal mu'mineen. They are Muslim, but they're not super deep into the root of religion. So they don't understand what they're doing.
Okay.
And so the first type, we can see that they are deep into hubbud dunya.
Yes.
The second type, they just want a peaceful life.
Okay.
They love dunya, but not at the expense of akhirah.
Okay.
But because of their ignorance, because they don't have a correct understanding of religion, they always help the munafiqin.
Okay.
Like never once in history have they helped the third type, the true mu'mineen, yes. Amirul mu'mineen.
Okay.
We can see the munafiqin of the time of the Prophet, how they manipulate the common people,
yes.
The majority of people,
yes.
And take them away from Amirul mu'mineen. And Sayyidah Zahra, salamullah alayha, in Khutbah Fadakiyya, she says, if you had followed Ali alayhi salam, he would just guide you to the true path, to the truth, slowly, slowly, without any pain, without any problems.
That's right.
But the first type, the munafiqeen, scare people away from true mu'mineen. Say, no, they are too serious.
Okay.
They're going to take away your dunya. And basically manipulate them because of their ignorance. So
I'm making you play in the same ground. I mean, when I was looking at this Black Lives Matter, you know, after George Floyd was killed by that police officer in the U.S., most of the models and the slogans that you say in the type of adala they are looking for is playing in the same field of liberal capitalism. Again, they are looking for a type of justice that is done in the social boundaries they are living in, very much leading into a kind of bodily, physical joys. Not more than that, okay? But this type of spiritual look at the top of divinity. But you know, the third group that you talked about, the true faithful Muslims, are not many, brother.
Yeah.
The true helpers of Imam Asr, okay? Who
you have to know their forces and their vision. Their vision is educating people, bringing people up.
Okay.
The sole thing they think about.
Even justice or adala can be taught to me?
Yeah, of course. Like,
okay.
Because we're ignorant of the names of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because we're ignorant of the place of everything, the appropriate place for everything.
Yes.
You said that if everything is in its place.
In its place, that's right.
That's justice, right?
Okay.
We don't know the place.
Yeah.
We think this is the place,
okay.
Right? So our efforts go the wrong way. And if someone comes and educates us about the right way, about the balance of the world, then we can find it in our heart,
yes.
Because that's fitrah, right?
Yeah, how much do we know the places? How much do we know the places, brother?
Unfortunately, you know, the
I mean, knowing the place is important,
yeah.
Okay? We do not know that. We know how to fill our fridge, okay? With different types of fruits, flesh,
yeah.
Chicken, flesh, or something like that. But what about the places of different things in our life, okay?
First of all, we have to know, we have to come to this awareness that many of the places that we are recognizing that the places of those things are not right.
Oh.
This is very important. And the reason is that unfortunately this era that we're living in is the era of media. So whatever they want to feed you,
yes.
With the, you know, the misinformation about the places of things, and this is exactly what you mentioned, that, you know, based on liberalism, you have, you know, some special and some very narrow-minded, you know, places being designated to things.
Yes.
So when we're talking about the justice of, I don't know, human beings, they you know, right away their mind goes to, you know, the equality of women and men.
Yes.
Or I don't know.
Or
the
payments.
Equality of, yeah.
The payments or wages.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
But this is not the way that. If you go beyond what we've been taught by the media, by the, you know, by the dominant media that, unfortunately, the ones that are governing the media,
yes.
They own the media, are exactly the ones that are trying to strip the you know, the justice from its reality and
that's
from
right.
You know, the essence, the real true essence of it. So. The first thing is that we have to become so suspicious about the media and, you know, As my brother said, one of the ways of education is not just by words. So those, you know, people of God, those elect people, we can, you know, they are the examples, the life models of human beings. So by following them, even though that we may not in all details know what, you know, what they do or what is the reason that they're doing that action, but by following their model and their footsteps, I think that would be a very good step for
some people. Might doubt this, that the media is a new phenomena, you know, in the last century, but the satanic temptations have always existed during the history. I mean, the type of medium was working out at the time of and its proper place. But the case is that, as you said, we have to refer to our very fitrah.
Yeah.
This is, but I think the people in the world and all this justice judicial system are very much concerned with the nature rather than the fitrah. And this is the make differentiation. I mean by nature is the physical boundaries and the physical capacities that exist all around us. But if you kind of refer to our very soul and the fitrah, then we can find, I think, the true meaning of justice. And then our look at the world will be very much different.
Yeah.
Maybe the places that we consider for the things around might be changed a lot. Thank you very much, Sheikh Qasem and Sheikh Sadeq, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. It was very kind of you. We tried to discuss justice, adala, and seeking justice based on the viewpoints of the supreme leader of Iran, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. It was very kind of you, Sheikh Qasem.
Pleasure.
And Sheikh Sadeq. Thank you very much. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to us. For more information, visit our website, apostolate.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah. Assalamu alaikum, Ya Abu Abdullah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest night, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. As I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Around the World with Reporters.
A high-level Lebanese ministerial and security delegation has arrived in Damascus. Deputy Prime Minister of the Lebanese caretaker government, Zeina Akkar, who holds several other positions, headed the delegation, which included the ministers of energy and finance, as well as head of the General Directorate of General Security. They were welcomed by Syria's foreign minister at the Jdeideh Tiabous crossing. The delegation held talks with several Syrian officials at once at the foreign ministry, namely the Syrian ministers of foreign affairs, finance, and oil. Talks focused on economic cooperation and Lebanon's need of Syria's help in transferring gas for generating electricity.
The two sides discussed the difficult circumstances they are living in, especially the electricity and gas sectors. The Lebanese side asked Syria to help Lebanon in transferring Egyptian gas and Jordanian electricity through Syrian territories. The Syrian side welcomed our request and expressed Syria's readiness to assist.
Both sides agreed to follow up the technical aspects and details of implementation through a joint technical team. Observers believe such a visit was only possible due to the U.S. backing of a plan that ensures Lebanon obtains gas.
I think Lebanon got a green light from the U.S. for such a visit. The Syrian government conveyed a message to the Lebanese side that it has accepted their request. I think the matter now is in the hands of Lebanon to get a regional and international approval for Syria's participation in pumping gas to Lebanon, as there are U.S. and EU economic sanctions on Syria.
Lebanon is seeking to revive a 2009 deal which stipulated that Egypt transfers millions of cubic meters of gas annually to Syria through Jordan, while Syria pumps the same amount to Lebanon. This is Lebanese officials' most significant visit to Syria since the start of the crisis in 2011. Lebanon, which remained relatively neutral towards Syria for so long, seems to have no other option now in light of its economic slowdown but to fully reactivate its cooperation and relations with Syria in hopes of some economic relief. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Streets remain deserted and business establishments closed in all major towns and the capital city of Indian-administered Kashmir for the second day after the death of the region's veteran separatist leader, Syed Ali Gilani. Indian forces continued a strong presence to prevent anti-government protests and enforce a strict lockdown. The authorities had also imposed near-total communication blockade across Kashmir as a precautionary measure to maintain law and order. On Friday, additional deployments were made to prevent people from holding anti-government protests after the Friday prayers.
Gilani, the most powerful separatist leader in Kashmir who spent many years in different jails, died on Wednesday evening at his Srinagar residence, where he had remained incarcerated for the past decade.
As the news of his death spread far and wide, authorities swung into action and sealed the roads leading to Gilani's Haidarpura residence. Security was beefed up across the region, barricades erected, and key roads sealed, calling and internet services were shut. According to his family members, the former lawmaker, who after quitting electoral politics in late 1980s had for years spearheaded the separatist movement in Kashmir, had desired to be buried in Srinagar's historic martyrs' graveyard. But the family members alleged that police forcibly took away his body and in a quiet funeral, buried him in a graveyard near his residence.
He passed away late evening. We live in his neighborhood. We were neither allowed to visit his residence to pay him last respect, not allowed to participate in his funeral sitting COVID. This is very unfortunate. It will hurt us forever.
We wanted to participate in the funeral procession of our leader, but we were not allowed by forces. He was hurriedly buried, and no one was allowed to say him the final goodbye. At least we should have been allowed to offer funeral prayers.
Known for his pro-Pakistan stance, Gilani led several anti-India protests and marches. He became a household name during 2008 and 2010 public uprising in Kashmir. A staunch advocate of Kashmir's right to self-determination, Gilani had stepped down as Hurriyat Conference chairman after he suffered with ailing health. He was conferred Pakistan's highest civilian honor in 2020. His death has been widely condoled, with Pakistan's Premier Imran Khan describing him as, quote, Mujahid-e-Kashmir. Meanwhile, police spokesman has said that there has been no incident of violence or protest in Kashmir after Gilani's death. Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan. Both the nations claim the region in full, but rule it in parts. Said Ali Safib, Indian-administered Kashmir.
A new major victory has been achieved by the Yemeni army against the Saudi-backed forces in Yemen's oil-rich province of Marib. Yemen's armed forces have recaptured the strategic Rahabat district and the southern Marib, meaning that all supply routes linking Al-Bayda and Marib will be cut off from the Saudi-backed forces.
Cutting off the supplies in Al-Rahba would weaken the enemy forces. There is also synchronization in the movement of our forces in the rest of the northern and southern fronts towards the city of Marib, and this constitutes a siege on the city from all sides. All supplies have been cut off from the Saudi-led forces, and they can no longer carry out any military action. Light weapons will be more effective, and the army is now able to advance more towards Harib and Al-Juba.
The Yemeni army has also managed to take control of other military sites overlooking the city of Marib from the western and northern sides, which would help the armed forces continue advancing towards the Harib and Al-Juba areas.
The Yemeni army managed to liberate the entire district of Al-Rahba
and cut off the supply routes from Al-Baida. With that, the liberation of Al-Juba and Habri area became easier for the Yemeni army. There is an insistence by the Yemeni army to liberate the city of Ma'arib, especially after the Saudi-led coalition's rejection of Ansar Allah's recent initiative to stop military operations there.
For months now, the Yemeni army has been intensifying its military operations aimed at liberating the strategic Ma'arib province from the Saudi-backed forces, including terrorist groups. Ma'arib has strategic importance as an oil-rich province. It is the last stronghold of Saudi Arabia in northern Yemen.
Yemenis believe that their army will eventually liberate Ma'arib from all foreign powers, including the Saudi-backed forces. They say now Riyadh has to bear the consequences of its disregard for Ansarullah's recent initiative to end the ongoing crisis in Yemen. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Overnight security clampdown and communications blackout occurred in Indian-administered Kashmir after the region's iconic leader, Syed Ali Shah Gilani, died. The mosques in the region announced the demise. However, Gilani's followers were not able to participate in his funeral prayers.
Every home in Kashmir is mourning this loss. Authorities did not allow anyone to move out of homes. They should not have done this. It was our right to participate in his funeral prayers. After all, India claims to be a democracy. Can't we even mourn?
Officials say people's participation could have resulted in massive law and order problems.
Restrictions were imposed to keep law and order in place. No untoward incident occurred anywhere during the last 24 hours, and the situation has been peaceful.
Kashmir has witnessed a record number of internet blackouts in the world and is the world's largest militarized zone. Analysts say people of Kashmir have been forced into this silence since India stripped Kashmir of its autonomous status in August 2019.
The silence which was imposed upon the people is a human rights violation. They could not go to attend the funeral of one of the veteran tallest leaders of Jammu and Kashmir, who has all along his life said and advocated about the right to self-determination.
The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has condemned the Indian government's denial of right to choose burial rituals inside of the Syed Ali Shah Gilani. Observers say people of Kashmir have been forced into a controlled kind of a life where every rule is not set by their choice, but by the force of the governing authorities.
Syed Ali Gilani was one of the tallest leaders of the resistance movement of Jammu and Kashmir and was advocating for right to self-determination. He deserved a respectful funeral, but the government did not allow the funeral to happen other than his family members. International covenants and international law says that every person who dies is to be handed over to his family for a choicest burial and a choicest funeral.
People of Kashmir say since the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party took a unanimous decision on Kashmir's special status in August 2019, a lot has changed without their consent. They say the silence of international community on the plight of Kashmiri people has added to their miseries, and with each passing day, living in the controlled land is getting difficult for them. And sooner or later, Kashmiri people are going to be the world's new asylum seekers. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
A house was recently bombed by a U.S. drone strike. Shrapnels have even damaged the door of the house. 10 members of a single family, including 6 children, lost their lives in the recent U.S. drone strike. As the relatives of the victims say, the owner of the house, which was targeted by the attack, was an engineer with no ties to any terrorist group. Imal Ahmadi is the brother of the owner of the house. He explains how the U.S. airstrike claimed the lives of his beloved ones in a moment.
I had left the house almost 10 minutes before that U.S. brutal attack. I quickly got back after I received a call from a relative. I saw the dead bodies of my brother, his sons and daughters all over the yard.
Blaming the U.S. for launching blind attacks on civilian areas, Imal is also angry on international journalists and the United Nations for what he says turning a blind eye on their misery.
A number of local and international journalists have so far interviewed us, but no one, including the United Nations, has heard our voice. Everybody follows his or her own agenda with paying no attention to our demand. We want justice, and the UN is responsible.
It was August 30 when the US airstrike hit this vehicle inside a house located in northeastern Kabul. Later, Pentagon said that they have successfully eliminated a vehicle packed with explosives in the city of Kabul. However, Taliban urgently condemned the attack, calling it an inhuman assault on civilians. Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Turkey has proposed to the European Union a substantial migrant deal. Turkish foreign minister said in a joint presser with Dutch foreign minister Sigrid Kaag that this time Turkey will not handle the burden of refugees alone and will need a new deal with the EU, unlike the previous one, where the bloc would only pay a certain amount of money and leave Turkey to handle the rest.
On the issue of the Afghan migrants, there will be no such cooperation if the EU's approach would be based on we give money and you keep them there. We have fulfilled our responsibility. The number of migrants trying to go to Europe has decreased 95%, but the EU did not do its part.
Following the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, Turkey tightened its security measures at the borders to prevent the wave of Afghan refugee influx to the country. Previously, the Turkish president said, his country has no duty, obligation, or even responsibility to be Europe's refugee warehouse, assuring that international cooperation is needed to prevent a new migration wave from Afghanistan.
There is an urgent need for a new deal for sure. However, this time the deal will be different than the previous one due to the changes that took place worldwide. Not only is it up to EU and Turkey, but also the United States is involved in the issue of Afghan refugees. Turkey now has closed its borders in front of refugees, not only because a deal is not reached yet, but the burden of refugees is actually affecting the AKP internally as well. People started to feel the burden of migrants and the country and are now pressuring the government to stop receiving them.
The AKP is under pressure from opposition groups and citizens who are calling for a solution for the increasing number of refugees and foreigners residing in the country, which most likely will affect votes in the upcoming elections. Turkish citizens are complaining from unemployment, high demand on real estate, and other problems caused by the fact that Turkey has become a safe haven to those fleeing crisis-hit countries. The Turkish government now has to make a balance between fulfilling the needs of the EU and international community and surrendering to its own people's demand of sending the already existing refugees back. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
As they stood for a photograph ahead of their latest meeting on Friday, EU foreign affairs ministers appeared to be in a jovial mood. However, critics say they have little to laugh about given the West's role in the Afghan crisis. At a press conference following the meeting, it was made clear the EU is not encouraging Afghan refugees to travel to the 27-country bloc.
The own commitments of the Taliban to let people to go out if they want. It doesn't mean that we have any kind of commitment from the member states to take care of them.
That statement is likely to enrage rights groups and aid agencies. Oxfam had already published a statement accusing the EU of turning its back on Afghan refugees. European Commission data suggests 3.5 million people are currently internally displaced within the country. One in three are going hungry. 500,000 people are currently trying to leave Afghanistan, according to the Commission. EU lawmakers say it's not fair for the EU to place the responsibility of refugees on neighbouring countries like Pakistan and Iran.
Make sure that they have and they will own their migration crisis and that we stay away from that as best we can. I think that is hypocritical at best.
A coordinated strategy by the EU to the refugee crisis is urgently required, experts argue.
If the European Union was able to react, to respond to the refugee challenge collectively, the individual burden for every single country would be much lower.
The role the EU, NATO, Britain and the US played in Afghanistan has been castigated in the European Parliament.
The Americans lied to their people. The Americans spent over $2.2 trillion, and over $2 trillion of it went to private contractors
One legislator suggests the EU misjudged the level of support that exists for the Taliban.
They obviously were appealing for many in Afghanistan, because otherwise they hadn't taken over the country so quickly.
Without assistance from the international community, European Commission officials forecast medical supplies will run out in Kabul within 2 weeks, and 120 children in the country could die every single day. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
If you live in England, chances are you're already paying more for your food. And it all begins here. Every year, tens of thousands of people come to work on UK farms from Eastern Europe. This year, the workforce is already down more than 10%. The culprit, farmers and economists say, Brexit.
We, as a farmer, are hugely passionate about employing local people, and there are many roles and career opportunities for local people here, but we simply don't have the people coming forward for the jobs.
Since Brexit, the right for EU workers to just turn up in the UK is no longer. The government quota only allows 30,000 EU labourers onto UK farms now. The industry say they need twice that number.
The cause of that shortage is a mixture of incompetence and hubris, because the British government said, oh yes, we can leave the EU, and after that everything is hunky-dory, we can rely on America.
The labour shortage is not limited to British farms only. They go across the board. The hospitality sector, for example, is 180,000 short. The meat processing sector, 5,000. When there are so many vacancies in so many different sectors in an interconnected economy, that is a problem.
One problem is in the haulage industry. Plenty of work, not enough drivers. With many waiting in long queues to take their driving tests, which stopped during COVID, creating a backlog that snowballed with Brexit. Meaning the industry is now 15,000 drivers short. Some have offered a substantial pay rise for drivers to lure more people into the job. Experts say there is a problem with that.
It is far from certain even a price rise will actually solve the solution. For a start, it's not going to bring back those EU drivers for a start. They've probably gone. So you see, the situation is bad. It doesn't look as though they can solve it at the moment, and it's going to be one of the factors of many putting up the prices very considerably in the shops.
For some industries here, COVID sent thousands of workers home. Brexit's been a big hurdle for many to come back. The one thing a post-pandemic rebound economy needs, though, is labor wherever it's from. And as long as this chronic shortage of labor exists, the average Briton will feel the pinch at the cash register. Saeed Puriza, London.
As an example of popular resistance, Palestinians held several rallies on Thursday along the separation fence. There were huge night confrontations, and Palestinians called for a complete lifting of the siege imposed on the Gaza Strip as a result of the continuous gathering by the borders that has been going on for almost 2 weeks. The Israeli regime began to submit to the Palestinian pressure as a list of Palestinian demands has been implemented.
Israel's new measures and facilities are not coming for the favor of the Palestinian side as much as they come to prevent the Palestinian outrage and try to restore peace by the border. Israel is afraid of these gatherings that represent the popular resistance resulted from the deteriorating life Gazans are living. These facilitations are never enough, and Palestinians want a complete end of the siege.
During the clashes, Palestinians burned tires and threw explosives to disturb the Israeli army. The regime soldiers fired live bullets and tear gas at protesters during the nighttime clashes.
Those are not facilitations. The new decisions are simple rights of the Palestinians that the Israeli regime has deprived us of for 50 years. Palestinians are living their worst times ever. While there is no medicine, no food, and we have to take action, all spheres of Gazans are here protesting peacefully, and these protests are ongoing until all the blockade is over.
Palestinians insist on keeping the resistance, starting from nightly confusion to incendiary balloons and clashing with the Israeli regime along the borders. The Israeli regime has not yet kept up with the demands of Palestinians, including ending the Kremlin blockade. Meanwhile, the resistance confirms that the Israeli new measures are not enough.
These Israeli facilities are not a gift from Israel. There are legal Palestinian rights, and this move shows that the Palestinian outrage forced the Israeli regime to submit to the Palestinian demands partially. Palestinians have the right to defend themselves and their lands, and the resistance will go on until a complete lifting of the siege.
Palestinians here stress that the popular resistance should be held along with the armed resistance until all Palestinian demands are completely achieved. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
In a small lab in Tehran, a big dream is unfolding. An expert team comprised of over 30 young Iranian physicists and engineers are putting the first building blocks of what would be the first Iranian-made particle accelerator. Also called synchrotron, the device produces high-energy beams by accelerating electrons close to the speed of light in a large donut-shaped vacuum chamber. The process seems simple in words, but it's painstakingly complicated in practice.
At the center of this laboratory complex, a fourth-generation synchrotron is located, which accelerates electrons to nearly the speed of light by using radio frequency systems and powerful electromagnets, and finally produces exceptionally brilliant beams of light in a wide spectrum ranging from infrared and visible light to ultraviolet and hard X-rays.
First built in the 1940s, synchrotrons were originally made to study high-energy particle collisions, but it didn't take scientists long to notice the synchrotron's byproduct, an extremely bright light that can be used in investigating the structure of crystals and proteins, monitoring air pollution, studying disease mechanisms, HD imaging, and cancer radiation therapy, among other applications.
The X-ray produced in this machine is a million times brighter than the other conventional X-ray sources. And it has also unique properties such as high coherency and polarization, tunability, and ultra-short pulses, which enables the scientists to achieve high-quality imaging. Information obtained by scientists can be used to study the structure of viruses and proteins, design new drugs, precise radiography from human body, examine the structure of surfaces, build smaller and powerful computer chips, develop new materials for safer medical implants, and help with the cleanup of mining waste.
The Iranian synchrotron is for now in the R&D stage. The developer's team says the project needs $300 million to be accomplished. So far, only 1% of the budget is supplied. The team hopes by shedding light on the significance of the cutting-edge technology, it can attract the needed investment from the government.
With a wide range of applications, from medicine to agriculture, the homegrown synchrotron would transform technologies. Experts say, for sanctions hit Iran, building such a device is more than just an achievement, but a miracle. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. Please accept our condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali about the Master of the Martyrs, Sayyid al-Shuhada, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Stay tuned.
Oh, تو کاشان شاید یه چیزی حدود 70 سال پیش یه میرزا حبیب الله کاشانی بود که کتاباش
Around 70 years ago in the city of Kashan in Iran there was a man by the name of Mirza Habibullah Kashani whose profession was recalling the tragedies of Karbala and reciting lamentations for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Since he was great in this profession, his time was full during the month of Muharram and he was present at different majalis for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Once, an old lady stopped him on the street and asked him to come and host the majlis of Imam al-Hussein for 10 days in her house. Mirza Habibullah was very much busy and gave a time to the lady which she thought she would not accept. That was 2 p.m., which is not considered a good time to hold the majlis for the guests and the neighbors. Finally, he accepted going to the old lady's majlis and recited a few words of lamentations and left the majlis soon.
Karbala, as I step onto your sands, you capture my eyes. Karbala, I see heaven has been placed here.
The day of Ashura came and Mirza Habibullah was busy, so he forgot to tell the old lady that he cannot attend her session on that day. It was near the noon that he became tired and took a nap. In his dreams, he saw a lady who introduced herself as Fatima, the mother of Hussein. In his dream, Hadrat Fatima asked the man not to forget the majlis of the old lady for Imam al-Hussein. Upon seeing this, he woke up and ran to the house of the old lady, where he found the old lady anxious about Mirza being late. Upon reaching her, Mirza was told by the old lady, "Where are you, Mirza? Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra is waiting for the majlis for her son Abu Abdullah al-Hussein." The main lesson that we take from this event is that the main hosts for the majalis of Imam al-Hussein are the members of the Ahlul Bayt themselves. Prophet Muhammad, Imam Ali alayhi salam, Hazrat Fatima, Zahra, and other respected members of the Ahlul Bayt.
Karbala, why do you hold such memories? Ashura, always full of mysteries. Ashura, always full of mysteries.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/em, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Beginning, the season's tears are flowing. Arima, we are condoling. Our new year starts with morning. Muharram is a beginning. The season's tears are flowing. Arima, we Karbala, what precious blood was spilled there? Ashura al-Hussein.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has sparked fears of a winter lockdown with plans to extend draconian COVID powers for another 6 months. It's been revealed. The British government has confirmed plans to renew some temporary powers under the 2020 Coronavirus Act. The article you're about to hear has been written by Leah Sinclair, a journalist writing for the London Evening Standard. The piece is titled Boris Johnson to extend draconian lockdown laws for 6 months. Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has sparked fears of a winter lockdown with plans to extend draconian COVID powers for another 6 months, it's been revealed. The British government has confirmed plans to renew some temporary powers under the 2020 Coronavirus Act. But the plans will be opposed by Tory anti-lockdown MPs, 35 of whom rebelled last time the act was extended. The legislation gives authorities and police powers to regulate public gatherings, close premises, and force people to self-isolate. They also include powers for the health secretary to shut down individual events, gatherings, shops, or restaurants if they pose a particular risk. But it also supports pandemic safety nets like protecting renters from eviction and ensuring sick pay for people who are self-isolating. Tory MP Mark Harper of the COVID Recovery Group said, "The Act contained the most draconian detention powers in modern British legal history." He told the Financial Times, "Our vaccine rollout has been a huge success. We have seen a dramatic and welcome fall in people suffering from serious disease and death from COVID as a result. We are going to have to learn to live with this virus, and retaining sweeping powers of detention in the Coronavirus Act is not consistent with this. What justification can there be for extending these measures? Meanwhile, Brent MP Dawn Butler said it was wrong for the government threatening to extend it again. The Coronavirus Act is a blanket of draconian, unaccountable powers the government has wrapped itself in, she tweeted. It's wrong that this government is threatening to extend again. It's outdated and unfit for purpose. Labour and Tory rebels must vote against it. It's time to replace it with something better, fairer, and more transparent. Meanwhile, former Cabinet Minister David Davis added, the Coronavirus Act contains some of the most draconian powers ever introduced in the United Kingdom. Thankfully, the crisis point of the pandemic has passed, so it is now time to roll back the extensive powers unwisely handed over to the state. Meanwhile, a government spokesman said, we will allow temporary powers in the Coronavirus Act to expire wherever possible, as we have at previous review points. However, it will be irresponsible to allow all temporary provisions to expire. Doing so would remove the government's ability to protect renters from eviction, give sick pay to those self-isolating from day one, and direct schools to reopen where needed, for example. The British public would expect us to retain these powers in case they're needed through the winter. The government has not confirmed which temporary provisions will be extended, or when exactly a vote will take place.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-reflection and happiness. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Brothers and sisters, we know Imam Ali alayhi salam, the first infallible Imam, the commander of the faithful, has said, you have no need to look beyond yourself. What you seek is within you, if you only reflect. This is a very open invitation for all the humanity, every single one of you, the listeners, those who are related to you, people you're looking at, it's an invitation for everyone to start reflecting. Don't let go this power of reflection that Allah has granted you. Imam Ali alayhi salam is promoting this culture of reflection where you introspect, where you evaluate, where you question yourself, where you try to find the realities. It is all through reflection. One of the means, one of the tools you use to get to that reality is reflection. This quote of Imam Ali alayhi salam, I believe, stresses reflection. Reflection brings understanding, and ultimately, understanding brings happiness. As humans, we naturally strive towards happiness in life. However, for us to achieve this, we must first understand what happiness really is. Scientifically speaking, happiness consists of few hormones, right? Each hormone plays a different role in regulating human body. However, ultimately studies have found that a common key feature of those hormones is that they drastically affect happiness and general positivity in life. This is because they moderate our feelings of mental and physical well-being. It has been proven that constant stress and negative thinking causes several physical pains, ranging from headaches to back and neck pain. In extreme cases, mental disorder can also occur. So self-reflection is your pathway to happiness. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing self-reflection and happiness. And we said that there are certain hormones in human body that play a significant role in attaining that happiness. And that happiness is a result of reflection. Those hormones get triggered through reflection. And this reflection also takes us to submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, we said that this negativity in life is not good. It is detrimental for human beings. This is mainly due to the fact that constant negativity results in the fluctuation of these hormones, thus rendering them unable to regulate the human body adequately, with the consequence being the occurrence of such disorders. So how long does reflection help exactly? Have you ever done something that made you feel guilty? Ask yourself this question. Maybe you hurt someone with something you said, or you wronged yourself by breaking a religious ruling. Whatever it may be, this guilt is guaranteed to bring reflection to the table. This is where the magic happens. When you reflect, your mind wonders and looks at even the smallest and minutest detail. You analyze, evaluate, and reach a conclusion about every one of those details. You may feel immense guilt throughout the reflection, which may or may not lead to tears. This accumulation of guilt and consequently reflection will, as a result, bring out the best in you. When this occurs, when you truly reflect and ultimately repent, Allah will forgive you. He is the most merciful and most forgiving, and most likely has already forgiven you, as He knows what's in everyone's heart. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.